All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, and today's show is brought to you by the Israel Bible. Of course, it's brought to you by the Israel Bible in general, but it's also brought to you by the Israel Bible, which is a product, a great Tanakh set. Some people listening to the show might call it the Old Testament or the Jewish Tanakh, the Jewish Torah, the Jewish books, 24 books of the Bible. And this one, the Israel Bible, has a special element to it, which is commentary specifically about the land of Israel. On every page, in English, beautiful Koran font, with my friend Rabbi Tully Weiss's commentary and bringing together of fabulous traditional thoughts and comments on every single page in English, specific focus on the land of Israel. Go to theisraelbible.com and type in coupon code Yishai, Y-I-S-H-A-I, get 10% off. No home, Jewish or non, lovers of Israel should be without this amazing book. I have two here, one ready to be given at any time. Check out The Israel Bible, and thank you very much for the sponsorship of The Yishai Fleischer Show. Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to my living room. And shalom, and welcome to Malka.
Hello.
Great to have you on the show, Malka.
Yes, Thank you so much. To be back.
It's great to have you, really. And today, I want to tell you that it's an unusual show for me in that right now, I am seeing Fuzzy. The reason I'm seeing Fuzzy is because for the first time in my life, I went to a serious eye exam.
Okay? Congratulations.
Yeah. And guess
Shekhiano.
Yeah. And guess what? I need a minimal reading.
Reading glasses.
Reading glasses. And whatever other pressures I felt is nothing more than probably digital eye stress. Is that what it's called?
That cannot possibly be, for you are never on a digital instrument.
Yeah, no, I am. And so my eyes are still fuzzy from the drops, although it's starting to unfuzz. You're as beautiful as ever.
Wait, what?
Meaning to say fuzzy or unfuzzy.
Yes,
in both parameters. Also,
well, I want to thank you. You bought me, speaking of nicenesses, you bought me some fantastic cheese this morning at a local farmer's market.
Well, what happened was I was leaving the eye exam, and I was walking with my sunglasses all fuzzy-eyed through the farmer's market that arrives here in Gush Etzion on Thursdays. And I walked through, and there was a lot of cool stuff. You make me buy only a seventh-year holy stuff. What's it called?
Kedushat Shvit.
Kedushat Shvit stuff. And
not
then,
only, but basically.
But basically, the fruits and stuff. And then I told you on the phone that there was all kinds of other local folks selling their stuff.
Their wares,
but not really wares.
In the little town of Anatevka.
It was like that.
It was like that.
But it was more like
dun,
in the
dun,
town
dun,
of...
Dun, dun. Yeah. Tradition.
Everything though is like there's around Gush Etzion, every town gives its flavor, and there's one town that has a very Judean flavor. There's two towns that have a very Judean flavor. One is Bat Ayin. Bat Ayin is the like it's like religious and Breslov, and it's like
right. it's like the mountain air blows through there especially.
Right. It's like Godi and and then there's another town which
it smells like patchouli.
Right. And then well it smells like patchouli and like old books, you know, and then you have the town of Tekoa, and Tekoa's got like mushrooms and an ancient
more patchouli actually
a very very one of the biggest deep caves in the Middle East. It's miles and miles long. They say it hasn't even been fully explored, and I've been waiting, and I kept forgetting that like on a rainy day I wanted to take the kids to do this Chariton. Is that the cave name? Yeah.
I don't remember.
This, have you been inside that cave?
No.
It is nuts. Within a minute, like you're doing 10 minutes, you're like so deep in and you
Whoa.
Cannot believe it. And then you crawl, big room. Crawl, big room. And
what was it like a Bar Kokhba hiding place?
It was like everything, but there are many kilometers
wow.
of cave. It's really something else. And it's worth it. It's moving. It's really moving. But you have to like breathe deep a little bit and not get into a claustrophobic type
oh,
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so there was the cheese guy was like a Tekoa type guy.
Yeah.
And a little hippie, very Judean. Judean hippie. That's the combination there. And he had multiple cheeses. And Malka, you love cheese.
It turns out I love cheese.
You like get a thing from cheese.
I don't get a thing. I just like cheese.
You know
how it looks at somebody's face when they like drink their first sip of like a really good cup of coffee and they're like coffee people?
Yeah.
That's my cheese face.
Except that because you don't eat cheese that often, like
right,
good cheese
a,
like that.
Right, it's a treat. It was a treat.
You know, Malka,
I'm sure people here are really excited that they get to start the show.
You know,
hearing about my cheese eating.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm okay with talking about cheese and about the simple pleasures of life. And I'll tell you why, because one of the feelings that I've been having recently is that our beloved state of Israel and its politics, mm-hmm. the state aspect of the state of Israel, is not commensurate with the beauty and grandeur, and as we say in Hebrew, Godel Hasha'ah, the bigness of the hour, the grandness of the hour. And I feel that it is not, it's not on parity with the greatness of the time. And today happens to be that it's been raining for a few days. Today's a gorgeous day outside.
Yeah, it's a nice sunny day. We've had a lot of partly cloudy, which is its own kind of blessing.
Sure.
But it's been nice to have, to see that it's a beautiful sunny day again here.
Right. And being fuzzy-eyed right now, with dilated pupils, and just walking around and just seeing the goodness of people and the sweetness of the land and the sweetness of the produce of the land and the cheese of the land. Cheese is a blessing. If a society...
I think we should make a T-shirt.
Right. Cheese is a blessing. If you're a society that's eating cheese and having wine...
Oh, yeah.
You're okay.
See, it's a little early in the day for cheese and wine, but I did think it
right
in my head.
Yeah. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, sweetie. So I just want to say that, like, cheese and wine are complex things. They are complex things to make. You need a society that is rooted in its land in order to make cheese.
Interesting, because it's like an aging.
It's like
an aging that's required.
And a complexity. It's not.
You got to, like, settle down.
It's a delicacy.
Take some time, make some cheese.
Right. And not just what about the vines? The vines got to grow, the snow's
right.
got to fall. It's a deep process. A deep process, you know. And when we're eating cheese of the land of Israel, it's wine of the land of Israel, both things of which I myself don't actually like that much. I don't really like cheese, nor do
well,
I really like
wine. What do
you
like of the land of Israel, Yishai?
I like the beer.
You
of
like
the land
olives?
Of I like olives. I do like olives. I like olive oil. I like a lot of stuff. It happens to be that those kind of tastes are not like my favorite. Although I was tasting some cheese and it was good.
You like za'atar?
I like za'atar a lot. I like labaneh.
You like labaneh?
As we pronounce
so
it in this house, labaneh. Okay.
You put a little strawberry jam on there. Yes.
No, I like it on the. It's funny. You
oh, you
say
like
that.
It savory?
Yeah.
I like it because it's very tangy. You put the sweet strawberry jam.
Yeah.
Bam.
A little za'atar.
You know
the
where
shuk.
I learned that?
Yeah.
I learned that when a long, 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 long time ago, we. Went to Sinai. Your mom took us on a trip to Sinai.
Sure.
And we made it basically to like the, and we took like a 3-day Bedouin tour, like sleeping on the ground, riding camels, where I learned to drive camels by myself. I made the Bedouins give me extra lessons on how to drive camels.
Right.
So I'm a licensed camel driver. And then we made it to this Egyptian port where they had like, so I asked your mother about the milk products because we were basically starving by the time we got to 3 days out and we got to this thing. And she said, well, you know, and she was like, she's your mother, as you know better than me, is so smart. And she knows things that like the average person just does not know. And she's like, listen, the labaneh is made this way and this way and this way. And there's basically no way that it's not kosher. Like it has to be kosher. So you take one of these labanehs and you can, you know, like usually I'm pretty strict about eating, you know, mahajan and everything. But like in this case, we were really, really hungry. And I figured, okay, it's chalaviyah. So we ate this labaneh and there were these like packets of like kosher strawberry jam. And I popped one of those.
Oh my gosh.
So it just reminds me all the time. Also, when I eat that, it reminds me of that fantastic trip.
There's nothing like that food experience that is like the food that you haven't had for a long time or you haven't eaten for a long time. And today it's very fashionable to do intermittent fasting, and I'm also part of the intermittent fasting.
So fashionable.
It's a system.
Right, it's a thing now. It's not so bad.
You know, a long time ago, one of the listeners to the show, Dan Mastery, told me a long time ago, he's like, when you grow a little bit older, you got to get used to the hungry feeling. Like, let the feeling of hunger be a feeling that you are more used to and more okay with. Don't always try to fill that feeling of hunger, he told me. And I was like, okay. Anyway, so I was in...
Well, there is one feeling of hunger, though, that I think a lot of people... Oh, I'm sorry. Was I interrupting you? Go ahead. No. You going to tell a story?
I was just at a really nice Judean eye doctor today, okay, with a cute, sweet American accent and glasses himself, and just good. It was one of those moments. So he goes to me, I was trying to remember this before, now I remember. He goes to me, I said, well, how much do I owe you? He said, no, I swiped it on the card. It's through the Maccabi system, the HMO.
Healthcare, national healthcare.
So he says to me, that's the beauties of our medicine, our medical system, don't you think? And I said to him, yeah, sometimes there's a great side to it. And he laughed. And then I said to him that the famous line that Rav Arya Levine, they asked him one time, they said, are you one of the 36 hidden tzaddikim, righteous men? Are you one of the Lamed Vav tzaddikim? So he answered, sometimes. It's a great answer, which is like, sometimes we can live up and be that person in that moment.
Right. Well, speaking of being hungry and speaking of Lamed Vav tzaddikim, today is a very auspicious day to be recording the show. And I want to give a blessing to everyone out there. Today on the yard site, on the Hilulah of the Baba Sali, Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera. Mm. And it's his yard site, Baba Sali, famous Moroccan rabbi. And today is a day where thousands of people will be going down to Netivot. Now, it's complicated again this year because somehow we've found ourselves again in another like flare-up of corona, even though I think there's a lot of hope out there because now it's this Omicron and people are noticing that really like almost everybody is getting through Omicron very, very well, Baruch Hashem, and people are having hope that maybe we're really getting to the end of this disease or this whatever you want to call it, this virus. Nonetheless, yeah, so they're limiting people going to the tomb of Baba Sali, but I lit a candle. And I've
been noticing that this Baba Sali yard site has been very meaningful to you personally.
You know, Ishai, if you're listening outside the land of Israel, I don't know if you like get the sense of what's going on here inside of Israel always. And we try to relay it to you. And I'm sure that you all are news readers and people who are, you know, of the most connected people that there are. But if you're inside Israel, you know that we're having a little bit of a morality crisis, I would say. And this morality crisis is something that seems to be touching just about every sector of society, the religious sector and the political sector, business, and I don't know, everything. It's just, there's a low, I feel. I don't know. I'm sure that other people, you know, everyone in their personal lives goes on their ups and their downs and everything. But there is a disheartening kind of atmosphere that's happening in the land of Israel, to my sorrow, in which stories of just like horrible morality and people not being what they seem to be, people not being what you trusted them to be, are coming out, and it's casting a lot of doubt, and I'm sure shaking faith in all in people for sure, but possibly in God also, amongst people all around. And I like don't want that. Do you know what I mean? I don't want that. I don't feel comfortable in that place. I feel that it touched me too. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you can look at these stories of like horrible abuses and things and not be affected by it. So I've noticed in myself, and I only noticed myself doing this morning, actually. I kind of was able to identify what I'm doing, which is trying to like, they call it in the Hasidu kind of, they call it like connecting to the tzaddik, like connecting to the righteous person. I think that there's so much uncertainty and so much that could disappoint us today and make us feel like the world is headed in the wrong direction, that I've noticed myself taking a lot more interest in the Torah of like the Torah giants, not just the Torah of like the rabbi who teaches you, who's in your community, who is a great person and helps you in a million ways, answers your kashrut questions and all that stuff, but like the Torah of like I'm reading a biography of the Lubavitcher Rebbe right now. And when I read this biography, it makes me like I notice like a calm feeling inside. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of like Rebbe Nachman Torah.
And you should give a plug to your...
I really must give a shout out to Rav Gedali Fenster, who I listen to on YouTube, but he's accessible in many, many ways. He's the most unconventional looking wise man that you could maybe see today. If you walked by, I've never met him personally, never spoken to him personally or interacted with him, but just to see him is to think that you're dealing with like a really suave businessman. And in fact, he kind of is a suave businessman because he runs a series of addiction centers in the United States.
He
helps people deal with their addictions through emunah, right, through faith and belief in Hashem and the Torah of Rebbe Nachman. And he is so prolific and so energized and so incredible in his giving over of the Torah of Rebbe Nachman in such a digestible and relevant way for just like us regular people that I can't say how much I appreciate the Torah that he gives out. And there's like not a small little interest in him here in the like English speaking community of religious Jews in Israel. His name is definitely getting out. Anyway, so he gives a lot of this Torah of Rebbe Nachman. And now with the yard site of Baba Sali, you know, Baba Sali, we are not Chabad, but we definitely have like a lot of Chabad-ness in our home. And I would say that like Chabad and the Rebbe informs a lot of our life. And the Baba Sali and the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a relationship. And this morning I was looking, I really wanted to share stories of Baba Sali because that's kind of, he was famous as a miracle worker, a real one, meaning to say people would come to him. Now his story, I just did a quick like dive into him. I haven't read any biographies or anything, but he was born in 1889 and he died in 1984. He was born in Morocco. Even from a young age, as like a child, he would fast and things, and like he wouldn't tell his parents because he knew that his mom would never let him like fast, but he was fasting all the time, and he was like a Torah scholar as a young man, like pre-bar mitzvah boy. Basically, only in 1951, so if you do the math, that's at like 62. At 62 years old, he made Aliyah, and he like moved to Lod like quietly. He was not a great, like people did not know his greatness at that time, and he moved to Lod. And then this thing happened to him, which apparently happens with hidden tzaddikim, with hidden righteous people, which is that people started to figure it out. Like he was too sparkly and people started to understand that he was something special, and he didn't like it. So then he moved to Yerushalayim because he didn't want people to like know about him, and he moved to Yerushalayim. And then so he was offered to be the rabbi of Lod, the chief rabbi of Lod. After that, he was like, no, 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 no. I don't want to be chief rabbi of Lod. I'm out. So he went to Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, he was again sort of like discovered. You know, this is pre-selfies and WhatsApp, so you could hide a little bit better, I guess, in that world. And he was offered to be the chief rabbi of Israel. Did you know that? And he turned it down. He didn't want to be the chief rabbi of Israel. At some point, the news came to him that the Jews of Morocco were not doing well, and he actually moved from Israel back to Morocco. He kind of strengthened them up a little bit. Then he came back to Israel. Then he wrote a letter to the Rebbe at some point saying he did not like attention and he didn't want to be like a great name in Israel. And he wrote to the Lubavitcher Rebbe saying, listen, I really want to come to America, and in America, I can like hide myself again. But like whatever the Rebbe, the Amud Olam says to do, then I will do it. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote back to him and said, no, you can't come to America. You have to stay in Israel and strengthen people there and strengthen he said in particular, modesty. Tzniut. He wanted help strengthening modesty in Israel. Only at that time, at around 75 years old, Baba Sali started accepting audiences, basically. And he accepted audiences until the very end, as I understand. and he would work miracles. And you and I, Isha, have always been interested in the stories of Baba Sali. We had a neighbor in Ma'ale Azeitim who was like the great-great-grandson of Baba Sali.
I don't think great-great. I think just
or
great.
Just great. Yeah, so great, yeah. Or great-great. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he, and it's crazy because today we went to the internet to look. I really wanted to do a good job presenting Baba Sali today because I think that his, I think honestly his merit is so great, and we're all so, I don't know, all, a lot of us are so desperate to see the kind of miraculousness that he, that kind of surrounded him, that we could use it so much in our lives today. And we want to reconnect to it to be sure it still exists, you know, to be sure that we live in a world like that still. So I went to the internet and looked for just some videos and stuff. And we saw a picture of Baba Sali as a young man. And he looks exactly like this guy, our neighbor from Ma'ale Azeitim, Nati.
Right.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. They looked the same.
Well, I'll tell you one story that from the Baba Sali that I liked. Actually, it was not from the Baba Sali at all. It's actually from the family of the Baba Sali, because my friend Nati would tell me how life was within this family.
Right.
First thing he told me, which is a strange thing, but he told me that money was never an issue. There was always a flow of money into the family. Like,
they didn't have to work hard.
It just, there was some kind of, he told me, like some kind of malchut, some kind of kingly, monarchical energy, and it just kind of flowed in. There was always just wealth. But what I think is more important is that he told me something that I myself think is very useful to know. He said that the grandma would walk past the grandchildren.
The daughter, you mean? The daughter of Baba Sali.
Whatever, in the family, one of the women. She would, or his grandmother, whatever, I think the daughter of the Baba Sali, she would put her hand on the mezuzah in the kid's door, and she would cry, praying about the kids. Just put her hand on the kids' doors, on the mezuzah, and just concentrate and pray and cry about the kids. I was like, whoa, that is intense. I remember telling him, like, that is an intense thought there. And there was an intensity of energy, basically, a very, very intense energy. So,
I mean, we've heard miracle stories also. We've had my
favorite miracle story is one time, basically what you should know is you had to stand with a bottle of water in line, and I didn't do this, and I didn't know about this, but you have to stand.
Well, he passed away in 1984, so you were just a boy.
But I did go to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe. My mom took me in America.
You're so lucky.
But you had to stand there with a bottle of water, and he would bless you, and then he would make you say the Shehakol blessing on the water that you drink, and it would be as though his blessing would be on something physical, and you would have this water, and people shared this water. One time this dude came in and he had a cough and he just had some kind of issues, and I think he had
cancer.
He had cancer.
I know what story
right.
you're telling. He had they had found growths in his lungs.
Right, growth in his lungs, and he told him oh, the other thing was arak. He had to drink arak, which is
anise, like an anise liqueur.
Yeah, anise, that's right. And we drink it here in Israel. Any case, so you had to say the shakol on this arak drink, and the Baba Sali made him take two shots of it. And on the bus home, he started coughing very strongly. And anyway, he coughed up these two like balls,
lumps of meat
of bad meat. And he was found
and
to be free.
And he was cured. That's it.
Right. That's right. And
I heard another story from the same rabbi who told you that story. A person who, as a young man, was like a helper of the Baba Sali. So Baba Sali had someone come in, and he had some kind of terminal illness. And Baba Sali told his wife or his shamash to bring fish, pieces of fish. So they brought fish, and he's like, eat. So he eats, and they bring more fish. He's like, eat, 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 right? And he's making him eat. He's eating fish, he's eating fish. And he at some point, he's like, I can't eat anymore. And Baba Sali's like, keep eating. So he like eats like another two pieces. He got to something like nine pieces of fish. And that was as much as he could eat. And the man lived another 9 months. He lived a month for every piece of fish that he ate.
Wow. There you go. Eat your fish.
And there's so many stories. I've been a little bit surprised to see, though, that you would think that these stories would be collated into some like incredible book of faith, you know, that would strengthen people. I haven't seen anything like that.
You mean in English?
In English.
Right, because in Hebrew they have it.
In Hebrew they have it? That's good to know. I think that somebody should dedicate themselves to this.
Israel is a more Middle Eastern country. It is a Middle Eastern country. And Middle Eastern Sephardic things are more prevalent here. And they're part of the general society as opposed to America, which is more Ashkenazic. And there's many, many beautiful, amazing Sephardi synagogues and congregations in America. But like as a general tone, the tone is not, you know. But I think probably Art School or something put out a Baba Sali.
That's interesting. I'm going to look into it because I think it's, you know, may Hashem bless us with miracles and with miracle workers. And, you know, but Baba Sali would always say people would thank him and he would be like, thank Hashem.
That's right. Speaking of thanking, I
want to
thank.
And so really, you know, I'm sorry, just to end that sometimes it feels like we lack these great giants in our society today. And I would agree. And I wish for myself that we had a person that we could go to and look at them and just get such an incredible surge of strengthening from them.
There are always righteous people,
but the point is that there is always Hashem.
Right.
And Hashem is the one that gives the blessing and Hashem is the one that makes the miracles.
Amen.
And he's still with us always.
You bet.
So
absolutely.
happy Hilulah.
That's right.
To Baba Sali.
And speaking of gratitude, I want to be thankful to Ben Bresky, Tabitha, Moshe Herman, Yocheved, Lou for getting the show out to the world from here, broadcast through the net waves, through the airwaves, in the internet fashion, through packets. And this great knowledge has been released in our time, so I want to thank
very much
the folks.
Don't get the digital eye strain, though.
Yeah, I got digital eye strain.
Look away for every once in a while. Look at the
take
sky.
Take a break. That's right.
Get a look at a tree.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I also want to thank all the folks that have been becoming partners and buying me a cup of coffee through buymeacoffee.com/Yishai. And it is incredibly appreciated. And there's been more and more folks just saying, hey, if I saw you walking down the street, love to buy a cup of coffee. And so I go to buymeacoffee.com/Yishai and buy a cup of coffee. It's really cool. It's a great way to share your love for the show and your partnership and your support and our togetherness, our friendship. So that's really cool. I also want to thank the good folks at Prohibition Pickle for being so unprohibitive with your pickles and doing a great job of getting delicious treats. And just the other Shabbat, we were able to take to the Ari and Jeremy Farm of the Land of Israel Network some delectable deliciousnesses.
All kinds of deli awesomeness.
That's right. Deli. Deli probably comes from the word delicious. Hmm. So that's really great. That's really good. I want to thank thejewishpress.com for putting out our show every single week. I want to thank the Israel Bible as I started the show. The Israel Bible is a sponsor of our show now, theisraelbible.com. And give them coupon code Yishai. Get your own The Israel Bible to the house. You'll love it. It's beautifully done. Great commentary. It's just a first-rate product and will bring God and the land of Israel into your life. So that's awesomeness as well. And I want to thank Hebron, the Jewish community of, and the Hebron Fund, which supports the Jewish community of Hebron and the forefathers and mothers. Yesterday, got a chance to tour two U.S. Army generals, General Fenzel. I think it's Lieutenant General, I think. Is that a term?
Brigadier General?
No. Let me tell you exactly, because these were two awesome, you know, real American hero. Yeah, they were like the real thing. They were like just kind of what you expected. Here's a picture of me and them on my Twitter feed. Yeah, so security coordinator, Lieutenant General Fenzel, Michael Fenzel, I think, and defense attaché, Brigadier General Sean Harris. I think 2 and 3-star generals.
Wow,
they came to see the Tomb of the Mamas and the Papas. They came to see it, to understand it, and to feel it. And you could feel the good Bible education that those gentlemen had, and gosh, you could just feel the
friendly
love.
Friendly energy.
You know, friendly. Yes, they were very friendly, but I would say, understand the mission of Israel. I'm always coming back to this. To me, it's become more and more obvious that the Bible is the key for us to get on the same page, literally and figuratively, you know? It's the thing that brings the whole story together. If you kill the narrative of the Bible, you have killed one of the main pillars of Israel. And I think I wrote an article about talking to young German journalists, and I pointed out that like Germany today and Europe, Western Europe, is post-family because they're not so into man and woman get married and have babies. They're not into man, woman. They're not so into babies, right, in these places. So they're post-family. They don't really believe that there's this entity called God, and so therefore they're post-God. And they're post, oh, the post-family is also related to post-national. They don't believe in national boundaries so much anymore. And they are also, they're post-God, post-nationalism, post-family, and they're post-Holocaust, which is they don't want to hear about the Holocaust anymore. So altogether, they're not like connected to us. Israel stands for family, nationalism, God, and the memory of the Holocaust. Those things are supreme in Israel. And so if you don't get those four things, you don't really get the point of Israel. These gentlemen, now you can say, you know, America's oftentimes on the wrong side of issues and all kinds of stuff like that. And that's true. But I'm talking now to you about the down home, you know, part of America and those folks. And believe me, I have my criticism about what the U.S. Army does around the world and all kinds of stuff like that. That being said, I also have a lot of recognition of the good that is done. Through this country that tries to be a spreader of morality and liberty, and certainly in the face of some of the other forces that our people fought, including the Soviet Union, which my parents were jailed in, writ large jail of the Soviet Union, and other threats that Israel faces, these gentlemen were part of the biblical narrative and understood it, and so important. So that's it. I also want to thank you, Malka, for joining the show today. And I hope that you like that cheese.
So good.
And I hope that the blessings of the Baba Sali and really his blessings through God's blessings through the great people will come into your life,
Amen.
Into our life,
to all of our lives.
Into all of our lives. I do want to ask people to write me an email, yisha@yishaifleisher.com. And coming right up right now, my short discussion with Alex Trayman, the CEO of JNS Media. And also the Jerusalem bureau chief. We'll talk with him a little bit about what JNS is doing and about also what our foreign ministry is doing. And then right after that, a new little section on the show called Table Torah.
Or, what's that?
Yeah, it's my Dvar Torah for the week.
Ooh,
it's that way
like.
That, but it's a Dvar Torah.
That's
yeah,
cute.
Yeah, it's for you to be able to you know, if you like it,
share with the fam.
Share with the family a Dvar Torah.
I like.
Yeah, there you go.
Look
and,
at you.
Yeah, there you go. Always thinking. As Ben Bresky says, always thinking. So there you go, folks. God bless you. Stay tuned. Stay strong. Stay connected. Alex Trayman is next. We'll be back with more. Don't touch that dial. Don't touch that that podcast. We'll be right back. More good stuff. Maka. Shabbat shalom. And
Shabbat
thanks.
Shalom.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show, and I am in beautiful Talpiot, Jerusalem, in the brand new offices and studios of JNS, Jewish News Syndicate, which is a very up-and-coming nationalist perspective Jewish news service out of Israel, everything about Israel and the Jewish world, and things that matter to people who care about the future of this country and the supporters of this country. And I'm here with Alex Trayman, who is the CEO of JNS and also the Jerusalem Bureau Chief. And first thing, Alex, I want to tell you congratulations on these new offices. They look great, and there's a great energy here, and I'm just excited about the future of a news outlet that gives a positive, strong Israel message, nationalist message. We needed this thing, just like America has Fox. This is going to be deeper, better than anything that's been here before in a long time.
Well, this is the news that we think that people want. You know, it matches the view of Israel and the Jewish people that most of the voters of Israel have, and certainly most of the supporters of Israel, and like the same situation in the United States, perhaps you even have a more hyper shifted media balance in Israel toward a progressive left that really represents a minority position, you know, of people's viewpoints, but majority position of the media space.
Right. The difference is that there have been and there are other nationalist prospective news sources, but you're doing it better, nicer, more pro, more money behind it, more power behind it. These offices give that atmosphere. I'm very excited about that. Just tell me one word about your competition. You talked about the bias, the imbalance here in Israel of news. I want to actually speak out a name, Times of Israel. Okay. I got a problem with the Times of Israel. They really, they are biased against For example, Hebron, they're always going to call it the Ibrahimi Mosque, or Shechem, they'll call it Nablus, et cetera, et cetera. That's just the tip of the iceberg of perspective that they give out to the world of this is what Israel is. Israel is a very blue state. Israel is a very, you know, it's all about land giveaway, and it's all about Israel apartheid and BDS, all kinds of stuff like that, instead of, you know, the Israel that we know, which is strong, beautiful, a source of peace, a source of strength, a source of biblical inspiration.
Well, Times of Israel sometimes comes out with great articles showing some of the great initiatives, but when it comes to the geopolitics of this country, they are often parroting the narratives of the New York Times and the Associated Press. A great example was just about 3 weeks ago, there was a stabbing attack right outside the Damascus Gate in the Old City. And there was video of the attack and also of the police officers that very quickly were able to neutralize a situation that could have gotten much worse than it was. And the whole top of the top Times of Israel article was about whether the police officer should have fired the second shot when the terrorist was already on the ground. It was very clear when you saw the full video that that second shot took place within seconds of the first shot and that the terrorist was still about to get up. But the Times of Israel article was all about whether or not the Israeli police officer committed a war crime by shooting a terrorist that just seconds ago had stabbed an innocent civilian and then attacked a police officer. So, you know, that's the Times of Israel. You would expect it from Al Jazeera.
Yeah. And the thing is about Al Jazeera is that you know they're biased. Times of Israel or Haaretz in English, they give off this feeling like we're the paper of record. And I think that that's really what's cool about JNS is that it's given off this same atmosphere, which is like, this is a paper of record. And they're to compete for what the record really is.
Well, to us, being high quality is very important. We'd rather get a story right than have no story at all. We always are quoting the top analysts on any topic. We use top writers, top editors, quality presentation on the website. Thus, we understand that people are used to very high production quality. People are digesting news from sources that have millions, if not billions, of dollars behind them. So if you want to compete on that level, you have to adhere to the highest journalistic standards, and we do that.
Very good. Now, we were talking about media, but media is also journalism. Journalism is reporting on reality, political reality out there. One of the things that you're working on right now is an article about the political reality of Israel. And we have a very, on the face of it, a very mixed government, which has some nationalist elements, right-wing elements, so-called, with left-wing elements, and the Ram Party, which is a jihadist party by its own definition. You would think that there would be a mixed bag of policy. But in fact, what you're showing, and really what people are seeing, is that this is all a kind of facade, a pseudo-nationalism, but in fact, it's leading the way towards the ideas of a two-state solution, again, towards sending money to the Palestinian Authority, which had been practically dried out, for people like myself who are involved in the fight for Jewish rights in Judea and Samaria, the grotesque evacuation of Jews from Chomesh after the murder of Yehuda Dimitman, and the clarity of which this government is sending a signal, which is we're not for Jewish rights in Judea and Samaria. We're going to freeze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria. We're going to destroy Jewish properties in Judea and Samaria. And we're going to let the Arabs take over as they're coming to the government, as they're taking over the Negev, so too in Judea and Samaria. That's what you're writing about. So tell me a little bit about this perception of this as a mixed government, but in fact, where is it heading?
Well, first of all, this government is as far a left constellation government that you could possibly have. Every single member of Israel's left, from the center left to the far left, is in the government. Now, the only parties that are in the opposition are the largest party in Israel, which is the Likud, a very strong center-right party, the nationalist right party, and also the religious party. So the right is in the opposition. The left is in the government. There are two small parties with very small mandates that are on the political right that thought it was more important to sit with the left than it was to sit with Benjamin Netanyahu, and that's why they're there. And one of those parties is led by the Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who has only six voting Knesset members supporting him, which is about 5% of Israel's parliament behind him, but he was able to shoot the moon, so to speak, and become the prime minister because that was the only chair that Israel's left could offer him to break away from the right-wing camp. And so even though he's the prime minister, he's very much beholden to many of the policies of the left. This mandate to form the government was belonged to Yair Lapid, who's the leader of the Yesh Atid party. And Yair Lapid is not only the foreign minister in this government, he's also the alternate prime minister. As part of a rotation, he will become the prime minister in August of 2023. And the agreement between Bennett and Lapid at the outset of the government is that domestically, policies will be led by Naftali Bennett. And he's been very, very busy trying to regulate his way through the COVID crisis. And meanwhile, Yair Lapid, as the foreign minister, has been out setting the diplomatic tone for the state of Israel and has been meeting with the Europeans and the Americans and going to the Emirates and Morocco and other places, leading the foreign policy of Israel. And it's actually, he's been really trying to dramatically shift Israel's policy away from what it had been diplomatically during the Netanyahu era. And there's been more and more talk in this government, not just by Lapid, but also by the defense minister Gantz, who has now two times met with the head of the Palestinian Authority.
Who had not been met on a high level
10 years
of the government, basically freezing him out.
Correct. And so Gantz, the defense minister, has met with him twice already. And in addition to the meetings, has promised many gestures, including arranging hundreds of millions of shekels in loans for the Palestinian Authority, which actually contradicts Israeli law due to the pay-to-slay terror payments to terrorists and the families of terrorists in prison and to the families of martyrs, or so to speak, or terrorists who get killed, you know, while performing acts of first degree murder. So we're not supposed to be giving, under Israeli law, any money to the Palestinian Authority, but this government has been looking for workarounds to the Israeli law and has also been just promoting the concept that they are somewhat beholden to the mixed nature of this coalition, in as much as they cannot start a diplomatic process toward a two-state solution with the Palestinians at this moment. However, they are positioning themselves that should Bennett and his pseudo-right-wing partners get thrown out of the government, that they certainly would lead Israel back toward a negotiated settlement and a two-state solution.
Negotiated settlement, two-state solution, these are nice words, sound nice, but what it really means is capitulating to terror, giving away the heartland of Israel, creating a terror state within our land, going against the historical rights of the Jewish people in this land. The foundations of Israel are in the heartland. And so, you know, these are negotiated two-state solution. These are fancy sounding words. But in fact, what they mean is what happened in Gaza, which we walked out a piece of land. We got terror instead. And we hurt our own history and our own image. That's one of the things that is so troubling is that the folks on the Israeli left don't understand the impact of the stuff on our image. And you showed me a quote just now, from Yair Lapid. Saying basically, like, if we don't do this stuff and we don't give away more land, we'll be perceived as an apartheid state. And this is the failed thinking on the left, which is, instead of understanding that the more you give into that by admitting that this is not your land and giving it away, the more that actually buttresses and gives credence to the idea that we took this land that's not ours. But when you hold on to the land, you're like, no, this is my land, bro. People understand that and respect that. So this is our foreign minister. This is my question mark. Yeah,
the foreign minister is supposed to be the champion of the cause to debunk the apartheid myth, right? He's supposed to be out there proving all the reasons why Israel is nothing like an apartheid state. And instead, he's actually becoming the champion for the left-wing Western Europeans and Democratic Party coming back to Israel and telling Israeli journalists that if Israel doesn't capitulate the way the Western Europeans want Israel to capitulate and go toward a two-state solution like you were talking about, that then Israel will be accused of being an apartheid state. And just the idea that the foreign minister would use the word apartheid state in any context, except for in the context of Israel is absolutely not an apartheid state, is very troubling, I think, and should be troubling to any Israeli and certainly to any supporter of Israel abroad.
All right, Alex, I want to thank you very much for your time. Again, I want to congratulate you on the new offices of JNS here in Jerusalem. They look great. And I think that this bespeaks of an important direction that people will get news. You said it from their perspective. I think from the perspective of the light of Israel, of the positivity of Israel, of a strong Israel, and also a strong international relationship with Israel, lovers of Israel, countries around the world. This has global ramifications, website, this new service. And I want to thank you very much. You're the CEO here and also the Jerusalem Bureau Chief. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Yishai.
All right. Thank you very much, Alex Trayman. We're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea. You're part of it wherever you are. And this part of the show is called Table Talk. No, Table Torah, not Table Talk. Table Talk Torah, Torah for Table Talk. Malka, you're still here with me?
Here I am.
What did you like? Table Torah or Torah table? How did you like that?
Table Torah.
Table Torah. Okay. So here's a little Table Torah for you guys, for everybody out there. And you could share this if you like. For this week's Parsha, which is Bo. Okay, and you know, Bo, which is come to Pharaoh. Just get in front of him. Get in front of the of Pharaoh and talk to him.
It's like bring it.
Bring it. That's what it is.
Oh,
I love it. Parshat.
Bring it on.
Bring it. Bring it on, Bo. Bring it on. I like that a lot. That's going to be the name of the show. So two things. First thing is that the first Rashi in the Torah. First Rashi commentary in the whole Torah asked the question of one of the rabbis that says, why doesn't the Torah begin in this week's Torah portion? The whole Torah should have begun with this Torah portion, which bespeaks of the first commandment to the Jewish people, which is, this is your month. This is the month for you to start counting the months. This is the month of Passover, and this is the new month for you.
Start counting from here.
Start counting from here. Also learn about the new moon. This is the first commandment to the Jewish people. The Torah should have began there. Why did it begin in Bereshit? And the answer Rashi gives, the famous answer, is that so that the world will challenge the Jewish people and say, does the land of Israel belong to you? And are you not thieves of the land of Israel? You're stealing the land of Israel. It belongs to other peoples. You're stealing the land of Israel from somebody else. You're thieves. You're interlopers. You're colonialists. You're settlers. You're all these words. And Rashi's answer and the rabbi's answer is, it starts in Genesis in the creation of the world so that God will tell you that He created the world and He gave it to the Jewish people. He gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. And so the Torah begins in Genesis to tell you, I decided what the world is. I made the globe, the heavens and the earth, the fish and the seas. I did that, and I gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. Okay, that's the first Rashi in the Torah, which is like very relevant for us today. But what that really means is that all of Genesis, all the way up here to the third Parsha in the book of Shemot, if this is the first law that's supposed to start the Torah, then the rest of it is all to teach you that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. All the stories of the forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah, and Rachel, and then the Joseph story, and the exile, and Moses coming on the scene, and the fight with the plagues. It's all to teach you, until this point, which is to teach you that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. God met, quote-unquote, these great people. He promised them the land. He promised them offspring. And from here on end, it's the next segment, which is the commandments. Where do we learn that phrase? We have a very short phrase about that, which is Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. The way of the land comes before Torah. Projecting that onto what we're talking about today, first you learn that there's a land. And then there's a people that belong to that land and the land that belongs to that people. Once you got that in your head and you understood that story, the next phase is, and they have to keep the Torah on that land. So the whole Torah is telling you, the whole book of Genesis is to tell you, there's a people, they belong to a land. And now that you got that straight, they have to keep the Torah in that land. And why that's so important for us today is also to understand another level of Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. The first part of the Jewish people's return to the land of Israel in this third Commonwealth period is capturing the land of Israel and securing it. And now that we did Derech Eretz, that came before Torah. Now it's the time for Torah. Now that the land of Israel has been somewhat secured in our hands, now we're entering a new era. And that's why you can also see that certain aspects of the state of Israel are a little bit cracking apart, breaking apart, like a seed that in its initial phase is strong, but then starts to kind of rot and tear apart, and a new thing comes out of it. So that is the period that we're in right now. We're in the period of bringing in Torah into this vessel called the land of Israel. And that's why you see some of the cracks, because it's time for the next phase to enter. And so we did the phase of Genesis. Now it's time for the mitzvot. It's time to bring the Jewish spirit into the land of Israel. And similar to that, and I'll finish off with this, there is a phrase, which is Vahi b'chatzi alayla. It was in the middle of the night. It was at midnight that the Jewish people left. Firstborns were struck in Egypt. It's in this week's parsha. It says Vahi b'chatzi alayla. It was in the middle of the night. And that phrase only appears in one other place in all of Tanakh, and that is when Ruth went to meet Boaz in the middle of the night in the book of Ruth. And that's on purpose. It's there to signal something to you. Just as there was an impending redemption and a great salvation for the Jewish people that was about to come about, so too here with the marriage of Ruth to Boaz would be the impending redemption of the Jewish people through the founder of the Davidic line, David, King David, and the Messianic line. And so too here again, it's the same point. What's the point? Which is that the Jewish people are in a state. The state really is the Joseph state. That's the state that we're in right now. The redemption of the land, the physical rebirth of the land. But it's time for the next phase, which is the King David plug-in. The King David plug-in is what we're looking for right now. And it was in the middle of the night, in the darkest period, that a redemption was revealed to us. And so we're living in a moment where we very much need that next step of redemption. We have the physical, we have the Derech Eretz, but it's time for Torah. We have the Joseph, but it's time for King David. It's time for the vessel that has been created by the greatest godly gift of the birth, rebirth of the embodiment of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Now we need to fill it with its true content, with its true soul has to be born into it right now. And that's what we're praying for. And don't be surprised, just as a seed becomes rotten, just as childbirth is this scary and dark moment, and you know there's a question mark around that moment. It's a moment of awe and fear, and something seemingly dangerous is happening, but it's not really breaking apart. It's actually being born. It's actually a great time is being birthed right now. And there is labor pains, and we have to be ready to get through that. And so, therefore, I say to you, my dear friends, wherever you are, this is the time. This is an expression that maybe I didn't coin, which is when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. Okay,
wow, nice one.
That's right, and that means what really that phrase means is we're being called right now to be part of it. It's exactly at the moment where you're like, where it's foggy and weird and doubtful, and you're like, what is the deal here? Is this the you know, pined away for Jewish state, or is this the great redemption? There's all this corruption and predatory behavior, et cetera. There's all these things, and everything seems so foggy, meurpal, we say in Hebrew. This is exactly the moment to actually hunker down strong, to like recommit yourself to helping pass through this tough moment. And that's exactly what we're being called to do. We're here. We're born here and living this time because God wanted us to be here at this time. And he trusts us to be the heroes of this time. He wants us to be the heroes of this time. And I dare say, my final thought on this, I dare say a very strong demand, which is when the rabbis say that any generation that didn't build the temple, it's as though they destroyed it. That's true in every generation, but it's truer in ours. We have been given great powers. And again, not my phrase, but with great powers comes great responsibility. Okay? Good. And so that's the time that we're living in. So anyway, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. God bless you. Lots of strength, lots of love, lots of blessings from the land of blessings. Thank you so much for being a part of the Yishai Fleischer Israel podcast. Do us a favor, send it to a friend, rate it highly on the podcast devices that you or apps that you use, and be part of it. Write me an email, ishai@ishaifleischer.com. Buy me a cup of coffee by doing buymeacoffee.com/ishai. Support our sponsors. Support the Jewish community of Hebron. Support the Land of Israel Network. Support all the good friends that are part of this, the Israel Bible, Prohibition Pickle, JewishPress.com. The good folks at JNS that we just interviewed today. There's a lot of folks that are part of a great effort and program. There's a lot of people that are putting in huge efforts, and I know you are as well. So God bless you, and thank you. Malka Fleischer, Shabbat Shalom, and thanks again for being with me. Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Lots of love and lots of blessings. Neshikot, kisses from the Land of Israel, and Shalom.
Join the Land of Israel Network Fellowship. Sign up today and join the revolution, inviting the world to learn Torah from Judea with Jeremy Gimpel and Ari Abramowitz.
We may come up short on becoming the person we want to be, but that's not the point. Sukkot is telling us that happiness is progress. Wandering aimlessly through a meaningless life is a recipe for suffering. What could be worse than walking around the desert for absolutely nothing? But as long as we are walking toward the Land of Israel, every step has purpose.
For more information, visit thelandofisrael.com/fellowship.